Los Nachos Amigos, and welcome to Record Breakers, a podcast where a group of friends gather together to share music with each other, an album at a time. It's like a little book club for music. I'm Petey Rave, and there's plenty of people left, including me, still. They haven't all left yet. They haven't all left my podcast yet. I'm holding on to them for dear life. With me is my team, my squad, my crew, my quorum. We've got David.
I'm David, and I don't know. I'm still here.
Mm-hmm. We've got Matt.
Check out this cool burger keychain I got from a PCB manufacturer.
Nice. And we've got Brett.
You can do better than mixing whiskey and gin. I'm just going to come out and say that. Those are not two great tastes that taste great together.
But if you also add triple sec and vodka and whatever else, then you can have a Long Island iced tea.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what if I told you that I don't need a Long Island iced tea probably ever again in my life?
I would believe you if you told me that.
Yeah, I can believe that.
I mean, I'm sure it's a great time for people, but I've climbed that mountain. I have seen the view.
Not needed anymore. Long Island iced tea aside.
I might. Yeah. I'm wild like that.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
We get turnt. But let's get turnt on this album. Let's talk about an album.
The turnt table.
Yes. We're talking about an album that caught my attention. Well, an artist that caught my attention. It's my album pick this time. So I was watching random videos on YouTube, but particularly skate videos, and in particularly videos from the YouTube channel for The Barracks. And one of the things that they have is their Battle Commander series. For different skateboarders to kind of like have a, it's like the new version of the skate video now, which is awesome. It's like the YouTube skate video, and it was of this gentleman by the name of Richie Jackson. If I have that correctly, Richie Jackson, who puts the hippie in Hippie Jump. As people have said in the comments, and I don't say that lightly, not only because he looks like it, but he actually does pretty solid hippie jumps. Like, on top of that, if you watch the videos, which is kind of a nice bit of kismet, or I guess a self-fulfilled prophecy. But one of the things about that video caught my attention was the song, the Richie Jackson Battle Commander on it. I was like, oh, this is a kind of a dope, kind of a song, a cool song, and let me check out what it is. So I had to like Shazam it, because I don't think they actually even like name drop it in the video. So I had to Shazam it, and it came back this result for this band called Orange Wedge, and the song and the album from which it came was called No One Left But Me. And I was like, okay, let me look this up. And I've noticed, I was like, it's not anywhere. It's not on Spotify. It's on Google. It's on Amazon. You can buy it on CD. So it was like, I was able to acquire it. And I thought, this is a band that nobody seems to really remember, or very few people remember. Let me just bring it on the show. It's like unseen. Let's bring this album on the show. And just to see, you know, just to see what happens. And that's what I did. The album, the band is Orange Wedge, and the album is No One Left But Me. Let's talk about expectations, because I know I had none. I had some expectations, but you know, just hearing the one song. But I'd love to hear about you guys. I'll start with David. David, what expectations do you have coming into this album?
You should start with Brett.
Okay, Brett, what expectations did you have coming into this album?
I watched that skate video because that's the one that has the cement filled like the parking cone of tricks. So I remember that. I did not remember the music, but some record breakers behind the scenes. This has been sitting in zip file form on my desktop for weeks. I have played it, listened to it, forgotten it, rediscovered it on my desktop, listened to it some more. And I got very into this for a long period of time.
Yes. David, what were your expectations coming into this album?
I was expecting something, as Brett said, something that would stick with you for quite some time. I really didn't have any idea what to expect musically, and that's the way I like going into every album I'm allowed to do on this podcast. I like discovering something that is in nowhere near my musical periphery, and I like that. So I came into this with an open mind, but zero expectation whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Matt, what were your expectations coming into this album?
Also pretty none. I had some thoughts, though. The only picture I could see of them on Discogs, they were playing at some outdoor venue, and there were some people on the hill behind them in the distance. So I was imagining some sort of outdoor music festival. The album was released in 1974, so I thought maybe it was some sort of like post-Woodstock thing. This came out 1 year after The Adventures of Panama Red.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, looking at them, Jefferson Airplane came to mind. I'm not sure why, but that's what came to mind. And I asked my dad, and he had not heard of the band either.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's not a lot of information out there except for like a few enthusiasts that remember them. But it's a band from the 70s that played like at least somewhat psychedelically influenced, but mostly just rock and roll music, and mostly just 70s rock music with some blues in there, like touches. This album has those touches. It's different mixes of musicians and instruments per song. It feels like it must have been recorded over like a certain period of time, and whoever, you know, was around or decided to record on the in that day recorded, and almost feels like that also showed up in the recording quality. In particular, the music, the instruments felt clear for the most part. There were times where like there was slightly less, you know, less fidelity, but they sounded clear and you can hear them. But the vocals reminded me of Misfits, in that they sounded like they were recorded literally on a potato sometimes. and like the singing had a Danzig-esque quality on some parts of it. I don't know if others like caught that, but like in some levels, but just with a different genre that being played. I think overall it ended up being a fun interesting record. There's very much a lot of ideas that very much speak to the time and place, the time of that this was recording. A lot of the 70s rock and roll tropes, you know, we got some Mellotron in there, we got some clavinet in there, we got, you know, prominent bass in quite a few of the parts, playing some like just bass meatles, meatleities from the bass, like of their own type.
I believe the official term for what you call bass meatleemies is woomba da booms.
Yeah,
yeah, it's what that guy from the Statler Brothers with the mustache from our as we cross promote to our D&D podcast, who was standing in for Drew, that the hanging out down low.
Yeah, doo doo doos.
beats.
Yeah, and you get a little bit of those. You know, and the guitar work is fun. It's very of its time, but it's done well, and it like a, you know, very indulgent guitar work. But yeah, it's just like this is like well done on some level. If a little bit also ran 70s rock and roll, but it's interesting kind of like discovering this kind of band. But I'll talk about more of that sentiment when we conclude. But yeah, this is very much 70s rock and roll with varying levels of fidelity. Brett, how would you describe this album musically?
I mean, the first thing that I noticed about this album was the bass guitar and how it was used. I looked for some photos of live in the wild. Like they're almost like photos of Sasquatch. You got to sort of like zoom in and then look for the wristwatch. But there's most definitely a photo of them with a Rickenbacker bass guitar, and I don't think that's what was being used on this album, because it was very nasal and thumpy, like I think a Fender was in another photo, but it was only from the back. But it's thumpy and way down low and nasal, but in this mix, it like you hear every single note that bass guitar is playing, and there's a lot of it too, a lot of flourishes. A lot of walking around. The bass guitar is probably the bell of the ball here. The drums are nice, and there's a dynamic range to the drums that I found like very good compared to some of the other things that were recorded. Because the further back in time you go when it comes to drums, the more they sound like somebody beating on a cardboard box that's turned upside down and like hitting a trash can lid. But you could definitely differentiate. Oh, he's working this or that. Or sometimes you're like, is that a bunch of cowbells, or is he just like doing a bunch of like stick work on the side of a drum? But that's the recording inconsistencies that Petey mentioned. The guitarist, they heard some Led Zeppelin, they heard some Black Sabbath, all of the '60s happen, and they were doing it long before I was doing it. But a lot of people did it after them. So some of these are it's not terrible. It's above replacement level, but they were very blues influenced. But there are two of them. There are two of them that didn't sound identical, which is always nice. And they did work some stereo into this album, because I was enjoying that with the two part solos. But really, they're not what you come here for. The vocals had some of the era heavy-handed vocal reverb. I didn't go to Danzig at first, but like it sounds like somebody recording in like a high school locker room a little bit at times, and it's like they rented the box, so they were going to use it. There's a fat list of the great keyboards of yesteryear. You know, it's a snapshot in time, and like, man, they had all of their toys out for this album.
David, how would you describe this album musically?
You guys are being far more complimentary than I would. Everything Brett said about them, the guitarists, hearing Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath and all the things that came in the 70s and late 60s before them, yeah, you hear that a lot. You hear it a lot. And I'm going to go ahead and say that this is not above replacement level as far as 70s rock goes. I'd say this is about a 260 average.
Hey, maybe they hired the two guitarists to carry all of the Mellotron and the synthesizers and the clavier.
Well, that's fair.
They have one for each side of it. Like,
that's solid work. That is good, honest work. However, I will echo everyone else's sentiment and say that I really, really enjoyed how much bass guitar you heard in the mix of this album. They avoided the curse and the trope and the cliche of being a hard rock band with two guitars and completely mixing the bass guitar out of existence. So well done on that one. I also really noticed that the drummer, who I actually looked up, his name is Tom Rizzo. I actually had some little good flashes here and there all over this album. So if you are a drummer or a bass player, you might get a kick out of some things all over this album. That, in that regard, it's really not bad. But generally, it's kind of 70s rock remedial level.
I mean, coming off of some of the albums that we just listened to, where we praised their production amount, this is
this is a different change of pace. Matt, how would you describe this album musically?
I will say, looking at the liner notes, there's only one guitar player, so I guess it's all overdubbed.
Yeah.
It feels like a pretty typical early 70s band. Like if you were to ask me to describe an early 70s rock band, this is probably something close to what I would come up with. It's kind of a step above a garage band, though. Like I can see them touring, not touring, playing around, though. Like I'll put it this way. I have heard bar bands much worse than these guys. Listening to it, I noticed a few artists that stuck out to me as possible influences. The first one that came to mind was Deep Purple, but something else that kept popping up, and maybe this is just partially because of the Mellotron, was Moody Blues. There were little flashes of that throughout, and as well as the Who's Tommy. Moody Blues. What's that? Yeah.
They wish they were the Moody Blues.
Oh, we all do. I do, at least. And also like these little bits of like, is that something reminded me of Tommy in some of these. And yeah, like everybody on this album, everybody playing and singing is like pretty good. Like the singer had that high chest voice and like it was well done. It was mostly on pitch. Yeah.
You've seen worse at your local Moose.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, before
but
we get
not into, much worse.
Before we get, oh, I say that,
no, it, yeah, it, the pits get low.
Yeah, yeah. But if the band, if you would describe a 70s rock band, hell, if you were like, the other band I kept thinking of was Stillwater, the make-believe band from Almost Famous. Like it makes me think of like if you were to make up a band, and like if this is there was a part of me that kept thinking of this and like is this like a viral project, like nobody's ever heard of this band. It's like maybe like a viral project for like a movie that's about to come out, this like fake band that existed in the 70s.
God, that would like, be amazing.
It's like I just kept thinking because
we
like,
just all stumbled these, upon it. We just stumbled.
Like an ARG for like the next version of Rock Band or something, or like
we're gonna show up in Wikipedia, guys.
It's yeah. About damn time.
Yeah. But yeah, like if we were to like retroactively manufacture a 70s rock band for a purpose, like this was like maybe like the what you would do, and it would sound like, because you wouldn't have necessarily, it wouldn't sound like Stillwater where you had actual musicians. It would, you know, it would be like, okay, this is the Great Value version of that. But let's get into some of the tracks. Let's get into a couple of tracks. There's something to talk about in a few of the different tracks, but I'll just focus on a couple as I burp. Let's go with the opening track, the SP, which I think had the most like jarring disparity in fidelity. Like it's like the music, the instruments sound pretty clear, like pretty clean and clear. You can listen, you can hear them. They feel your sound space, and then you hear like the vocals inside of a mason jar off in the corner, and it's like with that reverb, and it's just, it's a fascinating like mix and just juxtaposition. Plus it's a pretty cool like opening track with the bass work and everything. The track that got my attention, No One Left But Me, I think it's actually a pretty cool little rock and roll track. It's a pretty cool like little 70s rock track, and it's done well, and even if it, just on its own, it's fun to kind of listen to, and especially as an unconventional skate video soundtrack, does really well as well. I appreciate the element that it provided that. This might be a great good well to mine for cheaply licensable soundtrack music if anybody needs it
for your 80s action film.
Yeah. This is pretty fantastic.
If you're like a big Tarantino dork and want to try and make a movie like him.
Yeah. And then another track, Whiskey and Gin, as was named earlier, a bad drink combination, but a fun attempt at blues, like blues rock.
Well, they did the blues. It was more than an attempt. They landed it. They did the blues.
Joe Farrar, Greg Colson. Greg Colson is a blues man. Just believe him. I actually had their names written down here at the look down, to look over. Greg Colson is a blues man, and he's gonna tell you about it. But it's like a pretty fun. And you know, it's got that it works well, and it's fun to listen to. And it does have a nice example of the bluesiness of it all. Even if it is, you know. It works well. Brett, what would be some of the key tracks for you?
The opening track, SP, it's definitely a jam band type song. The bass and the drums, they were doing the heavy lifting. But there's some wailing guitars that I don't think showed up as much later on. That caught my eye. No One Left But Me had some weird percussion solo that I could not tell whether it was just two sticks beaten together, like, or it was like playing on the rim of the snare, or whether it was a bunch of different cowbells because the fidelity was not there. But it still was pretty. It was neat. I'm gonna imagine it's some of the coolest stuff ever, and nobody can tell me I'm wrong. A Dream. It's got one of everything. If it's got a keyboard attached to it, including a piano, but a piano that sounds way more in your face than the rest of the instruments.
Mark O'Connor, like jumping from keys to keys,
not just that, but like different cassettes for the Mellotron, because it went from the vocal chorus to the different stack of tapes I think there were strings, and I think it was an actual flute, but like, you know, the
Gene Ingham on the flute, according to the liner notes.
Because I don't think that, because there are some Mellotron like loops that you hear a lot that like, oh, I heard the Beatles use that one. And then there are some that you have not, and there are reasons why you have not. And you can go to YouTube and find all kinds of great videos of how you're actually supposed to use that crazy machine. But also, you can find a way to make the least like funky clavinet. Like you hear what a clavinet can do, like with Stevie Wonder behind it, or even just like flipping the switches. And people using it for something that's very much not what it was designed for. Again, I really like the early 70s for the like, hey, let's grab whatever we found in this old church mentality, and I love it. But boy, there is some rough recording in on Dream, and Whiskey and Gin, that starts off like they just listen to some Black Sabbath and ends like they listen to a bunch of
more like, Black Sabbath.
There are some straight up Mel Bay blues licks, like straight out of the book. Like it's blues lick city. And you know, it's like you can put blindfold somebody, have them spin around a baseball bat a few times and hand a guitar to them, and they'll be able to do the same, like, you know, and some of those licks, they did them, and it was, they could have done a better turnaround too, like, you know. but last but not least, the gate, there's the Donald Duck quack tone for the solo, which I highly doubt was intentional. But like, you can't have an album from the 70s without some strange space noises, and you got some, like these are they.
Yeah. David, what would be some of the key tracks for you?
The second track, Hungry Man. This is the first track really where I really noticed the drummer, Tom Rizzo. He had a fill like right at the end of the song that really caught my attention, that I thought was really good. The title track, No One Left But Me, out of all of the fidelity issues on this album, I thought this one was surprisingly well mastered. I give it bonus points for the I can hear every instrument cleanly bonus. Very good. If anything, the bass I noticed here on this track was a teensy bit higher than everything else. And I appreciate that with my rock bands. I appreciate when there's a guitar player and a singer in a rock band that are not afraid or insecure about their bass player being heard. Well done. Whiskey and Gin, that was their blues jam. And hey, they made a blues jam, and that's all right. I thought it was all right.
Mm-hmm. Matt, what would be some of the key tracks for you?
Hungry Man. Well, first of all, SP, at the end, near the end, I just wrote a note saying someone discovered tritones. Hungry Man. I kind of liked this one because it had this kind of funky off-kilter groove that I kind of started to dig a little bit. Dream. This song, it's played on electric. It's finger style, played with fingertips, not nails. And it's a great demonstration of what can happen when you don't use heavy strings on your guitar. Now I have a track to point to when somebody says, but I like my light strings. I'll say, well, you better play lightly, otherwise you'll sound like this. I have another note just saying, dude, metronome. There is a point where all the instruments come in, and it's not good. And a wild choir appears at some point, which I guess is probably from the Mellotron.
Well, I mean, you could be fooled because the Mellotron tape was probably a bunch of people standing in front of a microphone.
That's true. It's a choir. It's a secondhand choir.
Yes.
Yeah.
Store-bought.
Yeah. And this is why you need a good enough relationship with your bandmates for one of them to say, dude, this is not good. We need to do this again.
Yeah.
Loop the tape.
Yeah. Yeah. Whiskey and Gin, that chorus, I thought it was a parody at first, but I know it's not. Just because the chorus is, yeah, I'm a blues man. And I cannot imagine someone saying that unironically, but there's a first time for everything.
Again, like in a movie, when somebody's like, oh, this is them doing this blues stuff. And it's like,
right.
I'm a blues man.
That was my reaction, Petey. I was like, yep, this is their blues thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the drummer's falling asleep. Yeah.
Yeah, I found most of these tracks, I found something interesting about each one. People was kind of the earworm of the album. like I find myself kind of humming that throughout yesterday and today. And it has this nice chord progression, and it's played well. Lastly, the gate. This one just feels like a kind of a love letter to prog rock, because I got hints of like the overture from Tommy, where it goes from that into 1921, where it's, I got a feeling it's going to be a good year. And this was another one that I got strong Moody Blues vibes. Specifically, the track that it made me think of was House of Four Doors Part 2 from In Search of the Lost Chord.
Yeah.
And a little bit of Jethro Tull as well. I think that was mostly just some like chord progressions that reminded me of some other Jethro Tull song.
Yeah. Yeah.
We haven't talked about this album cover yet. Yeah. Like the like that's the elephant in the room. This like album cut cover. Out of cardboard.
Do we
cut
need out of cardboard.
Doesn't even have the full name of the band.
This was what made me think of like this of like the like somebody really eager to follow a trend and follow a sound makes what I think of this. I think of they totally thought we're gonna name our band Orange Wedge, but our true fans are gonna just call us Wedge because like New Riders, The Dead, like other bands. They're like,
yeah, you know,
like they say The Dead and New Riders and this, that, and the other. The real fans are just gonna call us Wedge.
Wedge.
Remedial then, Corpse.
It's like that's what I think of when I see the fact that it just says Wedge there. It's like
that, that was such that a, sounds plausible.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Like that's us, and then yeah, the cover is like, you know, graphic design is my passion.
It's like, man, I got the plugin to sound like Kavinsky. Let's do some Outrun music. You know, we're right at about the same time frame from when the music that the Orange Wedge is trying to play to 1974. Like, yeah. we could have that same gap, man, between Outrun and today.
This came out around the...
Can we just put on Masters of Reality again instead,
yeah,
please?
Yeah. We can. This not to, you know, bring up Almost Famous, I think this album comes out right around where that movie ends chronologically. So it's like, that's what I kept thinking of, is like all those like people and that music, is like them being like the fourth band that would be have been like ignored by everyone else, and like, oh, I'm gonna follow this. Yeah. Yeah.
2 years later, we had that Boston album.
Yes. Let's talk about some conclusive thoughts. Bring it back around the horn. Brett, how would you conclude on this album as a whole?
I'm sure if you were like hanging out in 1974, you could have a worse Friday night than going out and watching these guys play at the, you know, at the local place where you would go to watch music. I don't know. I haven't done anything like that in a year. But this was certainly not mind blowing. But it makes up for it by being fun in the, like, we found, Petey found a skate video, and then he found the music from the skate video, and it's like, it's enjoyable, and there's no way that I would ever find this album ever anywhere in my life, except for like this, and I enjoyed it, but it's definitely like digging up a time capsule. And making your own—it's like making your own fun in a farm simulator, kind of fun.
David, what would be your conclusion on this album as a whole?
Maybe I've been a little hard on Orange Wedge. They weren't offensively bad or anything, but there's really no shocker to me as to why this band really didn't get off the ground and didn't get a record deal. It was just kind of there. And I under other circumstances, I would probably use the word forgettable. And this album, when you get past the novelty of, hey, check this shit out, I found it, nobody's heard this in like 30 years. When you get past that novelty and actually listen to it, it's not exactly gonna blow your mind. It's really not. Unless this music is just in your wheelhouse and just kind of your thing, the only thing that I would take away from it is that if you're a rock band, you don't be afraid to bring your bass player up a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. No, yes, sir.
Don't be insecure. Here, here. Don't be insecure.
Bring a flute. Grab your flute friend, your flautist.
Find a Mellotron for the hell of it.
And then sell it, and then buy a keyboard for the hell of it.
Yeah, that's true. Find a Mellotron.
Just get a chord.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Get a chorus and a keyboard and have them play together. Matt, what would be your conclusion on this album?
I enjoyed it overall. I couldn't tell you how much of that is genuine enjoyment versus ironic enjoyment, but there was a fair amount of
dose.
I think it was a fair mix. It's in my iTunes library now. I don't foresee myself going like, man, I want to listen to some Orange Wedge. But I also if it comes up on shuffle, I probably will go ahead and listen to it.
Yeah.
Ringing endorsement. Put that on a sticker. Matt Walton won't skip.
Yeah, probably.
Won't
probably.
Skip.
Depending on my mood. Sometimes I'm just like, I have those times when I just skip everything and I'm like, yeah, I just need to do something else, apparently.
Sometimes you just need to be a blues man.
Yeah.
I'm a blues. If that was a Zappa song, I would have immediately known, oh, I need to listen to these lyrics and figure out what they're saying because these are going to be great.
Oh, Zappa's at it again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they put it on the box, quote, won't skip, .. probably, end quote. Matt.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the end of the day, so what we experienced was an also ran rock band from the 70s. And it was fun.
I would
to
call
like
them a 4A band. 4A.
Yeah. Yeah. This was fine. This was fun. Kind of going back to it. This is not necessary. There's a bunch of 70s rock bands you can go back to, but if this just happens to be in your playlist, that's cool. I wouldn't buy this on Amazon as a keepsake. I was going to just as a lark, but
there are better albums to buy. Ironically, there are so many better albums.
Like a Statler Brothers one.
Like the Dale McBride album. No, it's not a better album. It was still a fun time. It was still an interesting experience, and it was still like just as a thought, to kind of like look at this band, and it's like, okay. It's always good to like look back at like eras and realize how much music existed at any given like year or couple of years that has been forgotten by time, and mostly with good reason, that makes you realize like how much nostalgia is bullshit. You hold up like any era and you're like, oh man, this was a great era of music because you remember all the great stuff. It's like, no, there's always great music and then there was always shitty music. Like
the opening acts at Ozfest 98 or whatever.
Yeah.
Bubba Sparks.
You know? Opening bands. Yeah, period. In general.
The time somebody would, I put, there's a picture Somebody put I saw it on our gatekeeping. This is hip hop related, but somebody put it your hip hop, and it was like the numerical rapper who I shall not name, but that just got released from prison. I think Lil Pump, them two, and like a Hello Kitty boombox. It's like your hip hop, and then it's like Biggie and Tupac. It's like my hip hop. It's like, okay, that's selective. Trying to like talk about some selective memory. So I made my own, which is like Denzel Curry and Kendrick Lamar, and like a JBL a Bluetooth speaker. Said my hip hop, and then I put MC Hammer and Vanilla Ice, and then like a really outdated like shelf speaker from like the early 90s. It's like your hip hop. It's like it makes you think.
Good.
And that's what comes to mind with like this, like it's fun to kind of like pull back the reality of people's nostalgia in a way, on that element of like, okay, there was also this also ran music that existed and was kind of like okay, but not necessarily memorable.
This is the Dem franchise boys of 70s rock.
But
he appreciates that reference.
Yeah. This is at the end of the day, but even with like them franchise boys and Bubba Sparxxx, you can still go back to their hits and go, it's still fun to listen to. like I can still I can still be like booty 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 rocking everywhere. Like I can still play them in Def Jam.
Who can't?
Yeah. And still enjoy it regardless. So like it's still fun to kind of go back and listen to this stuff and to rediscover a band, even if it's not necessarily one that you'll stick with or remember going forward. Yeah, Orange Wedge, they were there. Let's get down to our haiku reviews, the moment we've all been waiting for, the main event of the evening. We're going to sum it all up in poetic form, get the 575. Let's get down to the nitty gritty. Haiku numero numero uno. Brett, what is your haiku?
Solid bass and drums. Tons of great keyboard doodads. Curiosity.
Yes. David, what is your haiku?
You're not missing much. It rocks. It rolls. It's okay. They kept their day jobs.
Mm-hmm.
As blues men.
Yes, as blues men. Matt,
I'm a blues man.
I'll guarantee one of these dudes is like teaching at a community college about like sound design or music theory or something like that.
I hope so.
Matt, what is your haiku?
Some good playing with questionable decisions. Thanks for sharing this.
Mm-hmm. My haiku: a band lost the time. Of the 70s rock bands, they were one of them.
One can argue with that.
Yes, exactly. Solid facts. We deal in nothing but facts here on Record Breakers, which is hardcore journalism and hardcore facts.
Is Panama red? Panama's red. Does Pope wear a funny hat? Does the Record Breakers stand for truth, justice, and calling it?
Yes, and hard hitting journalism.
Yes, that's what we do.
Yeah.
Journalism.
Yes. Yeah. Those are our thoughts on Orange Wedge, or Wedge, as they like to call
it. As the true fans say,
the hardcore fans, the wedge heads.
That's right.
The slices.
If we ever get together, I'm gonna have to find a recipe for vanilla fudge and then top each piece with like a little candied orange wedge.
Nice. Yes it's like a nice little like beautiful little snack when we do our hangout. When we get together, and like we gotta figure out a fun thing where we're like all six of us
can convene.
Yeah, all six of us. Like even if we can drag a Swagger into this.
And we can make burgers. We can make hot tuna burgers.
Yes, hot tuna burgers with vanilla fudge topped with orange wedges. It's fantastic.
Sounds good to me.
Yes. Yeah, those are our thoughts on Orange Wedge. No one left but me. You cannot find this on our Spotify playlist. That's fine.
No, really, it is.
Yeah. You can download it. It's out there, available to download, illegally. But hey, you know, it's a way to get it. But presumably on our Spotify playlist will be next week's record. And that's provided by David. David, what have you got for us next week?
Guys, I've decided that it's pretty much time to take the Record Breakers podcast and just eschew all standard music conventions altogether and just not deal with things that have verses and choruses and guitars. And I'm just kind of done with that for a little bit.
Metal machine music.
Ornette Coleman?
Close. I'm going to bring the 2019 album from Los Angeles-based Noise Project. Noise? Yeah, we can call them Noise. Pedestrian Deposit. And the name of their album is Dyer's Hands.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I look forward to that. So that'll be a fun discussion next week, but that'll be next week, and this is this week. And you can, of course, find us all over the internet. David is at Call Me DJM. Matt is at Emmerdick W. Brett is at HibDBRD. I'm at PD Rave. The show's at 4 Record Breakers. That's number 4 Record Breakers. RecordBreakersPodcast.com. Rebelli.net for this and other shows. Rebelli TV on YouTube and on Twitch. We stream.
And everybody out there, I want you all to know, I will keep saying this, especially you Diamond Club chat realm folks out there. PD Rave works really hard on this. He works hard to get us streaming on twitch.tv/RebelliTV. He's working very hard with this and Through the Tomes. He makes sure that we all have albums. We all have time to listen to them. So everybody out there, unsubscribe and then resubscribe and then unsubscribe and then resubscribe. And then make sure you give the Record Breakers Music Podcast, look for it by name, positive review in your podcatcher of choice. And then unsubscribe and then resubscribe again.
Hit us where you find podcasts. On Twitch we're streaming the recordings of these. I'm doing Through the Tomes on Tuesdays, where we do D&D. We've got things in the pipeline for other like RPG stuff. I've got to go actually back on those comments to see.
You do that, Petey.
trying to make some more fun projects. Despite the fact that I have a full-time job, I'm a full-time student. But I don't care. This is fun. This is what gives me life, honestly. It's going to make me actually be able to deal with all that bull crap. This is what...
Same.
This is...
Yeah, Panama Red. It's what drives everyone.
Yeah.
Same, brother.
Find us where you find podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud. Subscribe, do all the things. Until next time, hasta los huevos.
Toulou.
Rebelli Podcast, baby.
Make of the splash.
My toodaloos, man.